League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. And as you can see, and no one saw this coming, including myself, we are doing an episode about the relaunch, if you look carefully at the table, the relaunch of Glendronic 15, as well as Benriach 12, here to the U.S. market. And I am honored to have back on the show Stuart Buchanan. Stuart Buchanan was on the show. I think you were on episode 5. We were babies. Yeah. So 34, we're old people now. So we've been doing this very long. But I'm very happy to have him back on. This is kind of a shorter episode than what we're normally used to. But I'm very, very honored to talk about what's happening. I mean, as you can see, last time Stuart was here, we talked about whether or not they were going to keep the label the same. It's the same, and it tastes just as good as ever. So I'm extremely excited. And we find this out towards the end, but it's here. So by the time you're listening to this, the Glendronic's been relaunched in Houston, and, of course, Benriach has been here for a minute, and Benriach 12's here as well. So it actually landed today, from what I hear. Every week's episode you can find on iTunes as well as 94.1 FM Sports Map. You can find it on YouTube, Facebook, the whole nine yards. You guys have heard that spiel. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Glendronic and Benriach. They've been longtime partners. You guys know I'm a huge fan, and I'm just honored to have them. So without further ado, Stuart Buchanan of Glendronic and Benriach.
It's great to be back, and I'm looking forward to trying these whiskies myself with you. So we're good to see what you think.
I'm super excited. Cheers.
Cheers.
I always love getting someone in here with an accent. I always tell everybody, no one wants to hear me talk. You want to get in these people who have been dealing with Scotch and single malts for a couple of decades, and then just listen to them like almost like poetry. And having another Scotsman in the room is always a plus. I feel like it legitimizes the show a little bit.
Well, I'm just glad I'm still alive, to be honest.
I didn't understand a word of that. Say that again.
I'm just glad I'm still alive and here after the journey I've been on.
Yeah, you've been traveling around a lot, right? I mean, you just said you got back from Asia, which I don't know how you catch up on jet lag.
Yeah, no, I just sleep in a plane. It's the only time I get to sleep. So, yep, sleep in a plane. And that was, I suppose I left Scotland for Whiskey Exchange show in London. So it was London Whiskey Exchange, fantastic weekend there, and then jumped straight from there to Hong Kong and then all the way through Asia.
It's an event, a festival?
Yeah, I don't know if you know with Skinda Singh Whiskey Exchange.
Well, I know there's like three or four like really big ones. Whiskey Live's a big one, and but I'm not familiar with that one.
Most people reference Skinda globally for any rare whiskies that are on the go. So he's got the biggest, I suppose, whiskey collection. Must have one of the biggest whisky collections in the UK, if not in Europe.
Oh, wow.
And then also he's got a few shops down in London as well.
This is fantastic. And I know we've got kind of a short time with you today. So I definitely want to jump in with what's right in front of me. We've got a newly beautiful Benriach 12, as well as a very familiar, very highly coveted, very lovely, pleasant surprise, the new Glendronic Revival 15 is back.
Indeed, the revival of the revival.
That's correct. Revival squared.
Yeah.
So last we talked, you said you weren't sure what the label was going to look like, if they were going to change it, because there's already a revival, I think, with the Glenglassaugh line.
That's right.
And you guys kept it, and it looks great, and I don't think there's going to be any confusion whatsoever.
No, not at all. And actually, funnily enough, it landed Rachel's decision to keep that original label, because... Sure. She was so happy, and I think we all are so happy that she's got that same DNA running through Rachel's new 15, which was on all the old 15s as well.
Sure.
If it had been something drastically different in palette, that's when we might have changed it into something different. So there wasn't a comparative, but we were so happy with how Rachel's put it together. It fits perfectly back into its
There's
old
no
shoes.
Reason to change something. No, yeah.
Straight back into its old shoes again.
Well, let's jump into the 12 first. Sure. So Benrick, which we've talked a little bit about already, the 10, there's Benrick's one of those brands that I'll get you there. That has been overwhelmingly received, at least in this market, when it kind of jumped on everyone's radar about 2 years ago, and has just been this just a fantastic introduction to the line altogether. And now you add a 12, and it's gorgeousness. I definitely want to drink some more of that. I'm going to pour myself Beautiful. A healthy pour.
Excellent.
I can wait on you unless you want me
sure.
to pour
I'm
it.
I'm just enjoying the 10. I just love that classic pen. And the 10 is always solid. The 10 is, like, for me, when you look at this 10-year-old, it's an example of exactly what a Speyside whiskey should be. And Benrieach, every single step in production is about making that, from the water alone, that building blocks, every building block is pushing the fruits forward. And I think the 10-year-old is a perfect example of that. And I always think it's one of the fruitiest Speyside whiskies there is. And actually the cask combination, and then the 10, being a three-cask combination of bourbon, for that sweet vanilla notes that are going to run through the start of the dram. Then there's some virgin oak to give us that. I always think that kind of little bit of ginger spice and that kind of contrast to the sweet. And a little teardrop of sherry in there also just to give you that balance. And, you know, I always call the sherry the glue that binds the other two barrels together and maybe gives you a bit more viscosity, length and depth. Although it's not a big major factor in the palate, but a fantastic three cask combination. And I think the story of Benrieach is... Unless you go into this Warehouse 13, this mystical Warehouse 13 we have in Benrieach, you walk in that door, and honest to goodness, it's the biggest larder than any other distillery has for a master blender to go into and then pull these ingredients from that larder. You know, you've got rum barrels, pork casks, Madeira casks, masala casks, red wine barrels. That's just to name a few. Peated distillation, classic distillation, triple distillation, floor malted distillation. That place is just
Heaven.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
An experimental's dream.
Yeah. And that's actually the good thing is it's historical. It's not just jumping on a trend today and being diverse just because we think that's where the consumer's going today. It's always been diverse. You know, back to the Glenlivet ownership back in the 1970s, actually, they introduced the peat. Triple distillation was in 1989. Flow malted barley has always been in there up until 1995, I believe it was. And we've never reintroduced that again since 2012. So Benrieach always had this very much pioneering spirit running through it from its foundation.
From its inception.
Yeah.
The, you know, as I said, so the 10... A lot of younger Scotch whiskeys kind of get, you know, and it's funny because with bourbon now, if you can get something over 10 years old, it doesn't cost you an arm and a leg. Scotch has always been, you know, at certain age points criticized for being too young or something. But the 10, we had a few guys locally who we kind of introduced to the 10, and there was a shop near the Woodlands. It may have been Ryan's Liquor, and they just happened to have... and like an obscure bottle of Benrieach, I think it was 20. It's a blue.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a blue tube. Mm-hmm. And also they had a case of the Benrieach 10. But after we had aired the episode, everyone had been like, okay, well, let's see what this is about. And within a week, he had sold all six. And then when someone went in to buy the 10, all they had left was the 20, and he grabbed that anyways. So it will not only change your mind of what it means to be a 10-year-old single malt, it's bold, it's rich, it's deep, and it's absolutely fantastic. So I can only I can see there's a little bit more darker color mm-hmm. here, and without even reading the label, it makes me wonder what kind of wine influence we're talking about here. So tell me about the 12.
Well, the great thing was, now, it has been in America before, but in a relatively limited availability. Probably going back about 4 years ago. And the 12-year-old originally was an expression originally produced for Taiwan. It was a slightly brighter red label. I don't know if you maybe I'll see it about in the market. But because it was a Taiwanese exclusive, it was actually made slightly sweeter. It was an Oloroso cask and Pedro Jimenez cask, but they were finished. They were both finished, starting bourbon, moving to the sherry styles, and then the sherry styles coming together. But it was a sweeter... sweeter palate. And then as it went crazy around Taiwan, although it was a limited product, the old 12, every other market was shouting for it, can we get some, can we get some, can we get some. But at that point, we didn't have enough sherry casks in our warehouse to maintain the growth of the expression. So we just thought, okay, let's be honest about it. Let's not weaken that flavor profile. Let's sit back, take it off the market. Let's build up these sherry stocks again and work forward to re-releasing it. So it's only been since, when was it now? September, early September, we finally relaunched it again. But in a slightly different guise. And again, we want to tell the warehouse story. So, and actually Rachel's combinations of this. So it's a bit more complex than the first edition. It doesn't have maybe that really forward sweetness. It's got a sweetness there, but there's more layers to it. And what Rachel's using, instead of the initial cast, which were both finished, Rachel's using actually, I think she's calling it a three-way maturation.
Sure.
Because it is fully matured Oloroso, fully matured PX, and then there's some other sherry whiskey that has finished and is starting in bourbon then to sherry. And the reason we do that is almost building that palate. And what I love about Rachel's way of bringing whiskey together is she really forms layers in the whiskey. So, you know, some master distillers will give you a smoothness and a roundness, which is fantastic. Nothing wrong with that. What Rachel seems to do, and that's the only way I can maybe describe how Rachel differs from other blenders, is the layering and the flavors she can pull. You can taste every step of that along the way. So for me, the fully matured Pedro Ximénez cask, for example, that's coming through there, for me, that's probably more in the nose, because you do get that slightly more chocolatey note from the Pedro Ximénez sherry. But then the palate, you do have the sweet start of that Pedro Ximénez full mature, but then a wee sip. So again, it's so silky smooth coming in. But then you get this lovely, I think, the spice notes, the white pepper, black pepper starting to come through from the Oloroso, fully matured. And that's going back to the tannins of the Spanish oak that's going to give us that lovely middle, you know, that lovely click in the middle of the dram, which just gives you that comfortable tingle in the tongue.
Sure, sure. I mean, and I'm picking up a lot of chocolate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... You know, with sherry, you always get those beautiful Thanksgiving, I always call them Christmas flavors. Your
exactly.
Dried fruit, your dried stone fruit, you know, just really rich, deep, you know, raisins almost. But you're getting actually a ton of what feels like, what reminds me of the chocolate malt that was used in the Balcones Rye. Just kind of a deep, chocolatey deliciousness that's just fantastic. And you're talking about all natural color, right?
Yep.
And you're talking about three-way sherry maturation as opposed to just being, you know, there's a lot of controversy today around whether stuff is sherry finished or sherry seasoned or what have you. I mean, for me, and we talked about this last time, you guys do everything from every angle from an approach of what's perfect for that spirit.
Yeah.
And in this case, you're not seeing 80 proof, you're seeing 92. You're seeing a 46%, a little bump, that little bit more flavor boost from the actual raw distillate. I just think it's phenomenal.
And I always talk about building a profile. You know, you want that profile to come in. I always make funny noises. You know, just to want a flat line. And I think not only the three-way sherry cask maturation of the sherry coming through beautifully to fill that profile, the oaks coming through beautifully to give us that tingle of the tongue.
Sure.
That also the alcohol strength being slightly higher, make sure you can taste that distillery's character profile. And as much as we are using sherry casks in here, you can still taste the DNA of Benriach running through it as well, which is that orchard fruit note. So there is still a very clean, fresh, crisp nature to it. Sometimes sherry can go overly thick or overly viscous. It maybe sometimes give you an uncomfortable, you know, mouth feel.
Dryness, yeah.
Whereas here, it's all about this lovely fresh.
It's still very young and bright, in a great
crisp
way.
Yeah, exactly what Benriach should be in its palate. And then I think that's what the American oak then to sherry brings. For me, that looks after the distillery's character. You know, by moving from bourbon into sherry, for me, that keeps the honesty of the distillery's location, that space-side element coming from that double casking of the sherry.
So how available is this going to be? Are we going to see this everywhere?
Yep. I think globally we're rolling that out. Again, we did sit and wait. You know, it was something we had to sit on and wait for these sherry casks to reach that maturation. And now we've got to a point we know the volumes that we have in the warehouses, and that can now go across the world.
I did a quick, and we've got to take a quick break here in a second, but I did a quick little search to see y'all's label approval to see if there's anything else coming down the pipeline. I did see that you guys kind of resubmitted everything from the core range, the Allardyce, and is that how you pronounce that?
Yep.
Perfect. Okay, because I know a guy named David Allardyce.
Uh-huh,
works, David yeah. And so when I see that word, I always think of his his pronunciation.
No, but that's right.
I saw that they were you guys were, I guess, re-releasing the 21, the 18, and the 15 all from, you know, new labels got printed up.
Yep. And that was basically just to put Rachel's signature on them.
Sure.
Yeah.
So do we know what kind of price point we're expecting in Texas, at least somewhere around there?
I'm not actually, because it's funny enough, it's the first time we've tasted it in Dallas, but it's not going to be crazy. It'll sit perfectly in the balance in the range, and I'm sure we could get some detail on that.
I keep coming back to it, you know. So I love the 10 for so many reasons, and now when you throw in a ton of sherry, that sweetness, it reminds me of it, but with that sherry coat. You know what I mean?
It's true. And what I love about it also is, you know, we have Glendronach 12, but they're entirely different. You know, we're talking 50 mils distillery.
Sure.
And a lot of people may well think sometimes, oh, the sherry will be too much like the Glendronach sherry, but the production techniques in each distillery are totally different. The water source, the building blocks are totally different. So they really do exist in their own rights, showing example of a classic Speyside sherry and then going into the rich highlands of the Glendronach 12. So, they don't compete.
Yeah, I mean, we've had that same discussion here locally when it comes to mash bills. You know, the mash bill with bourbon is just, people say, okay, well, it's the same mash bill, it's the same thing. Well, it's not the same thing.
Yeah,
you know, you take different cuts, different barrels, different places in the warehouse. We've got a very short amount of time left with you today. Let's jump into the 15. I'm super excited. Has this been tasted in Houston yet?
No.
Yep.
Well,
yes,
not with
nope.
me. Not with
nope,
me.
Not with you.
First time I'm tasting it in Texas, actually.
More importantly, not with me either. So I'm excited.
Good. Let's enjoy this then.
Oh, here it goes. I actually had a bottle of this at the Whiskey Social 2 years ago. And it somehow mysteriously never made it to the table. It got drank before the show. It was it's such a huge fan favorite. I mean, there's a cult following around Glendronach 15.
And I was saying earlier to the guys, I have never, now this isn't just me saying it because it's our whiskey, I have never seen such hype around a whiskey full stop, unless it was maybe like a distillery exclusive or a fish, you know, bottling from Islay. It's just been crazy. Even the historical ones, crazy cult following for it. And that's global, not just in the US. Globally, it was the same case.
15 years. So, and the way we understand it is that you guys took a break because there just wasn't enough maturing stock.
Yeah, that's right. And we had to sit until 2002 when the distillery was reopened to get that stock in. So we could have actually, we had to sit a bit longer to build the stock, you know. So although it's 16 years now since the distillery was reopened, you know, you want to give a little bit of breathing space, build the stocks up, and then finally we can now get this back in the market.
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Any differences between this and the last release?
I cannot find it. It's a difficult one because it's hard. It's hard actually to. I think Rachel's done a fantastic job in this because it's very difficult actually because you think about the cask that we're getting now or have been using since 2012. They're probably richer than ever compared to the casks back from 96 and 95 and 93 that were being brought in when the old 15 was made.
Sure.
So actually, still to get such a vein of the old DNA running through it, Rachel's done a phenomenal job keeping that balance. But again, I always talk about the DNA of each distillery, and that's the thing about Glendronach. The DNA is so strong, even though you're throwing big sherry casks at it, there's never any denying that it's Glendronach. That
sure.
Glendronach is always there in the forefront. But I think what I love about it and how the core range works now, you know, from the 12-year-old, the start of the range, that for me is the sweeter notes, again, more of the Pedro Ximénez forward, the chocolatey sweetness there. Then when you go to the 15, which has always been in it, and that's the admirable note I look for, is that earthiness. And when I describe the earthiness, for me, when I nose this whiskey, I could nose this with my eyes shut, and I feel as if I'm standing back in a warehouse. Because this is like Dunnage Warehouse, earth floors, dark walls, low wooden beams. This reminds me of being back in the Dunnage Warehouses at the distillery.
You said earthy notes, and when you said that, I was distinctly thinking of old, rich pipe tobacco. Like
exactly.
That spiciness, but that earthiness as well as just oily leaf. Like just it's got very rich earthy notes to it.
It is. And actually, the distillate, even off the stills, if you listen to Rachel talk of even the distillate we use, you know, it's sandalwood characters, it's tobacco leaves, it's even leathery characters. That's in the new make spirit. So that's why I say the DNA is that. And that's why we can still taste from the DNA of the spirit in this 15-year-old tradition. Sure. And the cask is the complementary surrounding. You know, I think sometimes it's the sherry's almost pulled back, although it's a big sherry expression. The sherry's pulled back in balance to make sure the distillery's character really comes forward.
I don't have a current thing to taste it side by side with the old distillate, but it's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Again, you're getting all those same chocolate, earth. I like to think of the word Cavendish, that sweet pipe tobacco.
Indeed.
It's very rich, and I'm extremely excited. When is this supposed to drop in Houston? Do we know?
It's touching ground just as we speak.
It's arrived.
Two days ago.
The Glendronach 15 is
going to be $89.99. Okay, so for those who can't hear, the Glendronach 15 is going to be $89.99, which I think was about right when it was out last. So pricing hasn't really changed. Mm-hmm. And the Glendronach, or the Benriach 12?
$64.99.
$64, yeah. 12 years. We actually did a barrel selection of a 12-year-old whiskey that's going to come of a bourbon. It's going to be about $100. So when you get a single malt scotch, it's just rich in all of those classic bourbon notes. Those when people talk about being, I'm a bourbon drinker, I'd like an introduction to scotch, I always recommend sherry infused scotches. And I've specifically recommended the Glendronach, the entire Glendronach line. The 12-year-old and the cask strength are great bourbon crossovers.
It's funny you say that because I get that everywhere in the States. And it's funny because you'd automatically think with the Benriach being in bourbon barrels, that would be the palate going forward. But it's not. It's the intensity of the oak, I think, people are seeing as that jump from American whiskies into the single malts, that intensity of that, oak itself.
In the American palate, it's just so sugar forward. Mm-hmm. We love our sweetness. We've all got a sweet tooth. And you're right. Those ex-bourbon barrels don't quite translate for scotch finished in bourbon barrels versus bourbon finished in bourbon barrels.
Right.
But for some reason, you take an ex-bourbon barrel or sherry, finish it, or season the – whatever the case might be, you're getting a ton of those familiar sugar notes bourbon drinkers love.
Definitely. I wish I could sometimes give my favorite. What's your favorite whiskey? I can't choose. I really can't. And I've got a sweet tooth myself. But I do like a spice. I like that sweet – I love Korean food, put it that way. So what I love about Korean food is that combination of sweet, spice, and sour.
Sure.
So I'll go back to what I love about layers.
What do they call that? Umami? That sixth?
Yeah. I don't like that word, but I know exactly. I sometimes like...
It's a weird word.
I hate using it.
Yeah. I mean, it's apropos of what you're trying to describe, that the crossover of sweet and savory. And that's why... And I actually watched a documentary recently that talked about Asian food in America. And we think of Thanksgiving as this iconic American meal, but we eat Thanksgiving food maybe 2 days a year, and we eat Chinese food, like an overwhelming amount of Asian food, every single day. I mean, Chinese food's more American than American food. It's just the sweet and savory aspect of it is
what balance. We love. It's balance. That's what, again, there's sometimes a word I can never say enough when it comes to single malt. It is balance, and it's not just balance of flavor; it's balance in everything, balance of cask, balance of flavor, fruit, spice, sweet. But balance of tasting the location, the terroir, the distillery itself as well. And I think that's what we really focus on with all three of our distilleries, is that balance between each part of the whole process, from water to barrel and everything in between. We've got huge focus on just building, making sure the layers of all of these things are in the bottle and in the palate.
Well, this has just been absolutely fantastic. I know we only have you for a minute and I know we've got to go, but thank you so much for bringing Glendronach and Benriach to the table, and of course my old friend Benriach. This is just absolutely fantastic. So for those watching, I know we have kind of a pretty decent sized Texas footprint, you should be seeing this at about $90 a bottle. This is about, you said, 60, 65. And then, of course, if I remember correctly, this is in the $45 range. Absolutely fantastic. You've got the complete gamut of scotch, and if you're looking to get into it, I would definitely start at these three steps. And then I'd love to do an episode over Pete with you. That Curiositas is fantastic.
That's the last I drink every night.
Yeah, next time you come through, we've got to do, let's do peated.
There's some new peated Benrias on the way, so maybe once we release these in the US, we can come and do that peated flight.
Pete's where I started. Everyone's heard the story where I thought all scotch was smoky. Mm-hmm. So the first bottle I bought ever of scotch, ever, was a bottle of Laphroaig 18. And I had no idea what I was getting into. So it's a love affair with Pete. And that Curiositas is just phenomenal. So thanks so much for coming. I know we got to get you out of here.
Good to see you again. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. And thank you guys so much. We'll see you guys later. Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, everybody. I know we were kind of limited on time with Stuart today, but I wanted to give you a full hour of time. So I invited my good friend Gary Clark from Clark Liquor Brokerage. Blah, blah, blah. Try that again. I invited my good friend Gary Clark of Clark Liquor Brokerage to come on and fill this back half and talk about something outside anything else we've talked about. We've talked about Indian whiskey. We've talked about scotch. I think we may have talked a little bit about Japanese at some point, but not really. And we've talked about bourbon. So I wanted to talk about another international spirit, Welsh single malt whiskey out of Wales called Pendaren. I've been saying Pendaren this whole time, but it is Pendaren. And Gary came on and we decided to talk about a newer spirit to market. It's not super new, but it's also not super widely known. It is a great international Welsh single malt that I wanted to talk about. So this last half of this episode is going to be with my good friend Gary Clark. And without further ado, cheers. We've been working together a long time and I've always enjoyed and you've been instrumental in everything I've done from the very beginning.
Well, I try to help as much as I can.
And that's I approached you, 4 years ago and was like, this is what I want to do. I have no idea what I'm doing. And even,
you do now.
Yeah. Even having you, you came aboard and saw, I didn't want to book a venue for the second year for the Whiskey Social until I got your seal of approval on it. So you showed up at last year's venue and you signed off on it. And, we've done quite a bit together. And I couldn't be happier that you're here today because Pendaren, right?
Pendaren.
I always thought it was Pendaren.
The guys from Wales, I believe they said Pendaren.
So Pendaren is an actual brand that I've always been tangentially aware of,
yes.
But I've never dove deep in it.
It's one of those things that the previous importer was Sazerac, and we love them for everything that they do. And it was a minor brand for them, and it got treated as such. They only brought in one expression of the
classic, the black and the black box.
Right, it was a Madeira finished product, and they did what they could with one item. It's hard to find one item on the shelf. Even if it's my product, I have a hard time finding one item on
you
the shelf.
You need that billboard effect.
Right, you need something to grab people's attention. And so after however many years, I forget, they came to an agreement that Pendaren would leave Sazerac, and they went over to Impex Imports, who I represent for Texas. And we just got it in about 2 months ago into the U.S. and just arrived at Specs in the last few days.
Yeah. So we've talked about, at least on this show, the massive expansion of world whiskeys and other spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's familiar with scotch, bourbon,
right.
Even Japanese, which we'll have you on next week's episode to discuss that.
Know a little bit about that.
Yeah, a little bit here and there. You actually wrote the book on Japanese whiskey.
Okay, yeah.
So we will be discussing that on next week's episode. But Pendaren is a Welsh whiskey. Welsh whiskey.
Yes.
And they've been around for quite some time. I said I've been tangentially familiar with it because my mother-in-law was gifted a bottle a few years ago. And I was fascinated by it because I had never heard of it. And it was at the time of my budding interest in all things spirits related,
Everything they do from start to finish is a little bit interesting. There's no peat in Wales. So their peated whiskey is a peated cask rather than peated barley.
Meaning a used cask
that once held peated distillate. Yes.
Okay.
And they buy casks from Laphroaig, some of the used quarter casks. They buy casks from Kilhoman, and they buy casks from Connemara in Ireland. And so all of those are peated whiskeys, and they use those. And as we'll taste in a moment, it really comes through.
Well, let's not wait. Let's jump in it. So do you want to start with the peat or the non-peat?
Actually, let's start with the non-peat, now that I think about it. And that is the Pendaren Myth.
Pendaren. I keep thinking Pendaren.
That's all right. Pendaren.
I'll break it.
Pendaren Myth. And this is a red wine cask finish. Let me tell you a little bit about their production method. They use a still that they call a Faraday still. Sorry, I'm not a good multitasker pouring and talking at the same time.
No worries. I'm not a good single tasker, so you're fine.
Their still is called a Faraday still, and I would describe it as most closely related to the hybrid stills that you'll see at a lot of craft distilleries in the U.S.
Okay. The nose reminded me of some craft distillate.
It's pot distilled, but what they do is age everything in used bourbon casks. And most of those came from Buffalo Trace because of their previous association with Sazerac. And they continue to get casks from Buffalo Trace, barrels, I should say. But then everything they do is then finished in something else. In this particular case with the Myth, this is finished in used red wine casks. In particular, I believe these were some kind of red Bordeaux.
Very light, very fruity. You definitely pick up on those red wine notes.
Mm-hmm.
A sweetness that really is present immediately. What are the normal price points for stuff like this?
They're a little on the high side for something with no age statement. They're probably in the, I want to say, 70-ish. This particular and the ones I brought today are the Dragon series. And sure. They're all going to be within a couple of dollars of one another. There is some variation there. But then the ones you've seen in the past that Sazerac had with the Madeira is the Pendaren Gold, Welsh Gold series. And they're going to have the Madeira finish and a sherry wood finish in that.
Yeah, and we've talked about this on the show. A couple of key indicators of just a little bit more effort put behind a brand is the three label green lights, the opposite of a red flag, and that's non-chill filtered coloring.
Right.
Right, a little bump in proof.
Yep.
And of course...
And these are 43, I believe.
No color added.
The other series, the Welsh Gold, are all 46.
Yeah, so I think I may have mixed that word up. So non-chill filtered, no color, and a bump in proof. Those three things are key indicators of a little bit more effort put in a final product.
Right.
And it's great. It's front and center, too. A lot of people put it on the back of the label.
Well, and the other thing about the Faraday still that they have here is the distillery is located in a national park in Wales. And so they're not allowed to go tall. So this still was made to be quite tall. And they've had to disassemble it and have it in two parts. So you have the pot part of the still that everything runs through initially, and then it runs through the column part of the still. And it's still allowed to be called malt whiskey.
Sure,
in U.S. or U.K. regulations.
Yeah, and it's a single malt.
It is.
It honestly reminds me of a digestif, an after dinner spirit. It's very sweet, and it's light enough that I feel like it would be very deceptive. meaning you could probably go through about six drinks before you realize you've had six drinks. Yeah,
and then it'll hit you. The other thing that these guys do that is very different is their three distillers are all women, and it was not an intentional thing.
All right, I'm done. Cancel. Close. I'm just kidding.
It wasn't intentional. What they did is they put out an ad.
Sure.
And they said they wanted people to do, taste perception and nose perception on whiskeys. And they brought, everybody that applied came in, and the three that were the best were all women.
Yeah.
Because generally they have a better palate than we do.
I hate admitting that as a blanket statement, but I've openly said I think my wife has a significantly better palate than me, at least a better nose. I had my nose broken when I was much younger, and my wife picks up on things that always shocks me, but at the same time, it inhibits her if she's not used to a spirit.
Mm-hmm.
When I first introduced her to good rum, she was extremely turned off by it.
Okay.
And it took a minute for her to learn that new spirit, but she's got the nose. Her ability to taste and really pick apart a spirit is something that I'm impressed by, and I think it's a little bit sexy too. So,
well,
anytime anyone's good at anything, it's impressive. So,
yes.
That's awesome. So their distillers are three women.
Three women. Two from Wales and one from Lithuania.
And I don't understand. You said that they brought all these people in.
Well, they ran an ad, basically.
But an ad for a distiller?
Yeah.
Okay, so they won a competition, basically.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, it was a, you know, help wanted ad.
Sure.
And so people came in and they applied for the job.
Oh, a job application.
Yeah,
okay,
it was a job application.
I'm looking at it more like a contest.
No,
like,
no, it was a job application, but part of the deal was they lined up whiskeys across the table, and you had to go through and tell them what you smelled and what you tasted, and
sure.
And the three that did the best were the three women.
Wow. And they hired them all.
Yep.
Again, it's very deceptive. I feel like, you know, I know you're not a big cigar guy, although we've mm-hmm. been to a few cigar
yeah.
lounges together. It's something I feel like I could have a really nice medium to full body cigar on like a cool summer day, mm-hmm. which doesn't happen in Texas. But the last couple of days, we've had really great days.
Right.
You know,
we've had some cool summer days this autumn.
We've had some great summer days this autumn. And this is something I feel like would really hit the spot. Very, very bright. And I'm looking at the Celt, and it's got just a like a, almost like a twinge of green looking
right.
to the
right. It's very light colored, but again, they're not adding any color.
Sure.
So the colors you're picking out on that are strictly coming from the cask, and they are all used casks. So, you know, it's got a little bit of green tinge to it. Almost not a Chardonnay kind of color, but like a dark Sauvignon Blanc sort of thing for those wine drinkers.
It very much has a wine look to it.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with David Keck?
No.
Okay. He's a master sommelier here in Houston. Anytime someone brings up David, he was on the show. We drank wine together. And I've always been a red guy.
Okay.
And when it comes to like, you know, Signatory Series and other mm-hmm. specs, kind of a primary
right.
item. And it's almost they've worked out the simple mathematics of good,
mm-hmm.
and it's cash strength, decent age statement, signatory,
yep.
independent bottling,
right?
Sherry bomb for $100. Like they've got it lined up that you don't even have to taste it beforehand.
Yeah.
And that's how, for those of you who are familiar with specs buying practices when it comes to signatory, they don't taste it before they pick it. All of these specs exclusive bottlings are picked off a menu, and they really are based off of just the facts of the product. And if you have, you know, Glenn Ross 18 mm-hmm. year at 57%, that's such a great proof for single malts. Not
yeah.
our single malts, American single malts.
Right.
Are completely
no, I understand
different animal.
That, but
UK and Scotland and Ireland, all those single malts have more of a they shine at the 55%+ proof, especially in those used barrels, right?
Yeah.
Because it takes longer.
Well, you've got a lot longer in the cask, and so it softens everything up. You know, even you know some of the distilleries will do
a
wide
touch
center
more, if you don't mind.
Cut. Sure, they'll do a wide center cut, but if you're aging for 10 to 15 years or more, then you can age off some of those rough edges. And on the next episode, when we talk about Kilhoman, I'll talk about how the short center cut has to take those edges off. But
well, I mean, and we don't have to go too deep into Kilhoman, but Kilhoman's been around since 2005, so it's their aged whiskey stock is not significant. It's,
no.
It's very, very
right.
small family-oriented
mm-hmm.
farm, you know?
Yeah.
Are they owned by
they're
all
no, family-owned?
They're family-owned. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That's what I thought. And you've got a bunch more popping up on Isla too soon. So
yeah,
I'm actually a huge fan of Kilhoman, which is not the primary reason I thought of you today. But when I thought of you, I thought we got to get Kilhoman on the show. So huge fan of Kilhoman. It smells fantastic.
I really find those wine notes kind of coming off the bottom of the glass over here and hitting my nose.
How long have you been doing this?
I don't know, 30 years, give or take.
In Houston?
Yeah. I started out as a bar manager. I tasted Yamazaki.
Back when you could find Yamazaki?
1989, and it was one of the worst things I'd ever tasted in my life.
How do you feel about it now?
My expectations were wrong at the time.
But that's what I'm saying. Is
yeah.
With my wife, when I first introduced her to rum, she was so put off by it at first. And what I tasted her on was a 17-year-old Caroni at Gas
mm-hmm.
Strength. And she... She was like, it tastes like a rubber tire. I was like, I know, it's good.
Yeah.
And she well, didn't quite get it.
My first intro into drinking scotch, I'm a geek, and so I read books. And so I went and bought Michael Jackson's World Guide to Whiskey. And in the book,
he
said that, you know, again, this was late 80s, that the biggest, boldest flavor you could get was Laphroaig. I said, okay. So I went down to the liquor store, and I got me a bottle of Laphroaig 10-year-old, and I came home, and I poured it in a glass, and I went,
yeah.
And I said, wow, if I can learn to drink this, I can learn to drink gasoline. And I have not had gasoline in quite some time, but Laphroaig is fantastic.
Yeah.
But if you're a drinker of Laphroaig, and then you go to something like Yamazaki, you are really going to be disappointed because it's not going to have those flavors.
Well, and I'll be honest with you, I know that we're going through a Japanese boom, but I've not been convinced on Japanese yet. My journey in whiskey, when I like Hibiki,
mm-hmm.
it's hit me right, and yeah. I love the Nika straight from the barrel. No, that's not what it's called.
Nika from the barrel, yeah.
And then the corn whiskeys, the 95.5 corn whiskeys, the Nika the coffee malt, coffee grain.
Yeah, the coffee grain.
Love them all day. But Yamazaki in general?
Yeah. When Yamazaki came out, and this is getting into the other subject, but when Yamazaki came out, even the Japanese hated it. It's one of the reasons that Masataka Takasuru left Suntory and went and opened his own distillery is because Torii, the guy that owned Suntory, decided this is not right, and he moved him off into a beer brewery.
But even though he knew it was good.
Right, but it's not what people wanted, and so that's not what he needed to sell.
And that's what's fascinating about this is even bourbon, the golden age of bourbon was during a time in which no one drank bourbon. I mean, everyone wants that Stitzel-Weller juice.
You mean when I sold it all?
Yeah, no one wanted Stitzel-Weller juice, and now it goes for absurd amount of money, you know? I mean, even someone like Randy Blank, who we had on the show, he bought the first ever private bottling of Van Winkle.
Okay.
And he bought it in 2001 or 2002. And he was going to go for the old Rip Van Winkle 10.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, he had heard that they couldn't confirm, or he didn't hear, but that he was told that they couldn't confirm that all of the distillate was Stitzel-Weller juice. So he went up a notch. He went to the Van Winkle mm-hmm. 12. So the Lot B that he purchased, he wanted it because it was Stitzel-Weller juice, that classic era that no one was drinking mm-hmm. bourbon. And he paid $35 a bottle for Van Winkle Lot B, an entire barrel of it.
Uh-huh.
And now those same bottles go for $3,000 online.
There you are.
So it's like your way. The problem with spirits in general is time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could be ahead of your time in certain industries, but when it comes to being ahead of your time in spirits, it's a matter of decades.
Right.
So way off.
People will kill to get a bottle of Port Ellen, and yet the reason the distillery closed is that it wasn't, the distillery was not efficient, which
sure.
is the real reason it closed. But it wasn't anything anybody needed.
Or anyone cared about.
Right. I mean, they could easily have replaced the juice with Kalila, and so that's what they did.
I think part of that initially stems from the fact that you can't have something,
right.
the fear of missing out. Then the other part of that is simply over time, when you do change your expectations around a spirit,
mm-hmm.
like introducing someone to Armagnac from
yep.
bourbon
yep.
or Scotch from bourbon, you have to reset them. And that's really what you have to do. If their whole life is one thing and you try to introduce them to something else, you want to convince them, you want to find a tie. Like,
mm-hmm.
for instance, Glenfiddich Bourbon Barrel Reserve 14-year-old. Fantastic.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Great introduction for a bourbon drinker and a scotch.
Mm-hmm.
Glenfiddich, 14-year-old, and it's like $45. It's a great introduction to scotch, but you have to not just tangentially tie them together to get them to change lanes. You also have to get them to reset their expectations.
Yes.
And if you can do that, then you have people who all of a sudden love gin and rum
mm-hmm.
and convincing my wife to love rum and peat, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the big one.
Pete's
the big one, man.
Right?
I mean, Pete, trying to convince people to drink Pete, and it tastes like a medical latex glove and a rubber tire and the ocean and a dock, like a barnacle covered dock and a campfire. And those are all good things.
Yes.
You've got to. And so if anyone listens to this, and I actually got my first piece of fan mail the other day from Northern California, and I thought, this is the coolest moment of my life. I have four kids. Forget the kids. I don't care. I got a piece of fan mail. It was the best thing of my life. But they kidding. But if there's anything that you take away from this show, it's that I want people to reset their expectations, but try everything.
Right.
Not just try everything. Wipe away what you expect. If your whole life is spent with, let's say, Jack and Coke, trying to introduce them to drinking something straight is a stepping process. Yeah, they'll try it straight. But what the normal stepping process is mixing ice, water, straight. Right? That's the pretty – I'd say that's a consensus.
Yeah, I can see that.
If you go straight from Jack to neat, takes the right type of person. The guy that helps me, Thomas, he helps me with Whiskey Pete. He is a big whiskey drinker. I had him over one night, and he was shooting everything. And he's not – he never really drinks. But when he does, the only way he knows how is to shoot.
Right.
And so we sat down, and I kept thinking, you got to slow down a little bit. Like you have to – there's this beautiful dance that happens in the glass. Whether it's peated whiskey or bourbon, there's something in there to appreciate and pick apart and spend time with. So spend time with it.
Exactly.
Speaking of spend time with it, I want to try this Kelt.
There you go. And talking about peat and getting into peat, this is a perfect way to do that.
All right. So tell me about the Kelt.
So the Kelt has been aged in used, I believe they're bourbon casks, bourbon barrels that have previously held Laphroaig. Or they do buy Laphroaig quarter casks. They do buy used barrels from Kilhoman, and they buy used Connemara Irish whiskey.
I pick up a little Connemara too. Connemara, another Beam Suntory brand. Is there a correlation there?
No.
So because Laphroaig and Connemara both Beam brands, they happen to enjoy their casks.
Probably, but I do know from previous experience, back many, many years ago, that Beam is not one to ignore small companies and help them out, you know, planning for the future. Because small companies eventually get to a point where you either stay small or you get bigger. And if you want to get bigger, you essentially have to have somebody with deep pockets.
Sure. What's the which is how they're scooping up these – these
sure.
Little, yeah, that
well,
makes
I mean,
sense.
Remy comes in and buys Berkeley. That's
sure.
If you want to get bigger at some point, you have to have the money.
We talked about on the show, too, the dichotomy in craft beer especially, where when you're a small, struggling company, everyone's there to support you. But when you finally start making a success out of yourself, you get ripped to shreds.
Yes.
And it's this weird thing that we do as humans where – your whole point at the very beginning, people see a dream in you, they see, they believe in you, and they support the hell out of you. And then the moment you sell off your small business, you're a sellout.
Exactly.
No one's thinking about the fact that I have a wife and four kids and I want a dream home. And
let me ask you a question. Would you buy a craft-made cell phone?
No.
No.
No. No, I think that I don't know if that's the same comparison, but well, that's a pretty damn good point you're making.
We all like to think of whiskey as being this magical thing, but at the end of the day, it's a chemical process that's being made mechanically. And yeah, there may be somebody there watching it and moving a bar.
Sure.
But it's still a great big copper pot or a big column.
Sure.
And it's, you know. We make it into something kind of cool, but it's really a chemical manufacturing process.
Sure. I mean, we set up the dominoes and then watch them.
Right.
Watch them. We know how they're going to fall. This has got a very unique nose to palate to finish. because I initially got Laphroaig, and then I got more Connemara, and then when I taste it, it also takes you in a couple different directions.
But the peat on the palate is a lot lighter than any of the things that we're talking about them having.
It's extremely light. Yeah, right. No. So as far as Laphroaig goes, or anyone, whether it's Octomore or Brookladdy or Ardbeg, it's a third of the amount of impact.
Right.
It's very light.
I think when they said when they measured it, it was more like maybe 15 to 20 parts per million rather than
which is like half of what Laphroaig is.
Right.
Let me ask you this. Do you know what they distill at?
You mean what proof it comes off at?
Sure.
It actually is pretty high because of the Faraday still. It's in the upper. I got to think here for a second. In the upper 80s.
180s?
Well, I'm thinking of it in alcohol by volume.
Oh, 80. Okay, so 160s.
Yeah, so 160s.
Okay, so
upper 160s, maybe even 170s.
Do you know what it goes in the barrel at?
Oh, it comes down to 60%.
Okay, 120.
Yeah.
Do you know the typical age range you expect to see in some of these expressions? A blend of.
I think they're generally doing 5 to 7 years in the bourbon barrel, and then finishing for another year or two in whatever cask.
X wine cask. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know when was Pendaren started? Pendaren.
The idea they were batting around the late 90s. I believe it opened around 2001. The first spirit was coming off about 2000, or the first whiskey, aged whiskey, was 2003, 2004. And like many of the distilleries, I'm sure that the whiskey at 3 years old was nice to sell and get some cash flow, but it probably is nothing compared to what we're drinking today.
Correct. Yeah, it's grown quite a bit. I mean, it does remind me of some lowland, lighter, fruitier. Mm-hmm. It's not gonna punch you in the face or burn your throat. It, as many people would say that it drives me nuts. It's very smooth.
It's smooth. It's soft.
Soft is a better word.
Soft on the palate. But it's still a lot of flavor.
Oh, it's definitely flavorful, and I'm definitely happy with it. Which ones are you still on the first one?
Yeah, I've still got the
Gary. I need you to drink with me, Gary.
Well, some of us might have to drive today.
I have to drive? This is two drinks. Two and a half. I had something before the show. Two drinks and we're here for another. Oh, sorry. We got another show after this. All right. Point taken. We'll have my assistant grab some. I don't have an assistant. I'm just kidding.
You'll be your assistant in a minute.
Oh, yeah. So where can you find it locally?
Specs.
Okay.
It'd be the Specs downtown here in Houston.
And for the one guy that listens to me, which, by the way, thank you for the fan mail, in California.
They do have wider distribution in California. I think that it's, and I don't know for certain, I know that like K&L Spirits in San Francisco, and I'm sure probably a certain number of Total Wines in California.
All the big guys. Big guys. They're going to find it.
Yeah. Impex Importers owns their own wholesale company in California, and so they're able to do things a little differently than we can do here in Texas.
You know what I'd love to have on the show? I'd love to have on, I'll say that, no, I could say his name. I would love to have on Chris Detmore.
Uh-huh.
And maybe someone from another tier.
Okay.
To discuss, because you're talking about the people who've been doing it the longest and the most impactful, it's Specs.
Uh-huh.
They have changed almost every facet of liquor in Texas, and a lot of it has been for the positive.
Absolutely.
And I would love to talk about specifically upcoming potential regulations that are being proposed for like Walmart, these other big what do they call them, for grocery stores to be able to carry
grocery
them.
Grocery stores.
So I'd love to have that conversation.
But what I will tell you is even if. Or I should say when grocery stores are permitted to have spirit licenses in Texas, they will still not be able to sell liquor in the grocery store because they're not going to change the rest of the rules, which require that you be 21 years or older to buy anything in a liquor store. And if you put liquor in the grocery store becomes a liquor store.
Sure.
And they're not going to change the 10 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, Monday through Saturday.
So they would need like a WB Costco setup.
Right. It's going to be like that or Fiesta liquor stores or that kind of thing where it will have to be a separate.
Well, then why don't they just do that now?
Because the state law does not permit publicly traded corporations from holding a spirit license for retail sale.
And
so Walmart and Kroger and all those.
But Costco is.
Costco is done by WB.
They get WB'd it. So why wouldn't Walmart do the same thing?
They tried it a couple of years ago. I believe Gabriel's out of San Antonio did one for a Sam's Club in Fort Worth. But I don't know that anything ever really came of it.
Yeah,
I
think it never took off.
No. And the other problem you've got is the state has what they call the one share rule. And that means if you own one share in another tier, you can't be in the tier, you know, whatever other tier. So as an example, McLane Corporation, which you see their trucks on the highway all the time, they deliver to Walmart. And they are owned by Berkshire Hathaway. You know, big.
Sure.
Well, Berkshire Hathaway also owns a large share of Walmart. So the state of Texas says that McLane cannot hold a wholesale license in Texas for alcohol because they are owned by a company that holds shares in a retailer.
Well, they made the connection all the way back.
Right. There was a company out of Mexico called FEMSA, and they used to own a bunch of beers like Dos Equis and that kind of thing. And they sold all those beers to Heineken. Well, FEMSA is a big grocery chain in Mexico, and they decided we're going to open convenience stores in Texas. And the TABC said, that's fine, but you're not going to have any kind of alcohol license because when you sold the beer to Heineken, you took a share of Heineken. You own a percentage of Heineken.
Sure.
And so now you cannot hold a license at retail
for
in Texas.
For any alcohol.
Right. And, you know, everybody's fighting these.
Sure.
But, you know, they said it's not really fair that it's a one-share rule because the state of Texas owns shares in various alcohol companies through various retirement plans and that sort of thing. And yet they regulate them.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of that, it'll end up in the courts. It'll be tied up for years to come. But, you know, it is what it is, and we're not going to change it. We have to make the best of it that we can.
Well, you know, in our overall system is horribly inefficient, but
it's intentionally inefficient.
But we do we are making gradual steps towards better laws. I mean, even with marijuana or whatever. So we're working on it. But with that being said, that was quick. That was two segments. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
I appreciate it,
guys. We have to go. We've got to do a Japanese episode right after this. You'll see it in a week. In the meantime, cheers.
Thanks.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.